Workforce and Economic Development Committee to order. And this morning, we're going to be having a public hearing on House Bill 2206, and I will open that public hearing. Signed up to testify on House Bill 2206, we're going to have Cam Brawley and Lita Culligan up first, please. Would the two of you like to come up as a panel? Okay, sounds good. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Cam Preuss Brawley. I'm the director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. We appreciate the time this morning to talk about House Bill 2206, known as the Skill Up Oregon Fund. Lita and I this morning are going to share the presentation that's in front of you. Our interest this morning is to provide you some information about why we think the Skill Up Oregon Fund is important, who will benefit, and a little about how it will be accomplished. We also have time on your agenda on Friday, where we will bring before you local community college and workforce and employment providers. And they're going to share with you more about how it will be accomplished and who will benefit. So today we have a lineup of folks from the state level to talk about the coordination of the initiative as well as our testimony. And I'm going to move pretty quickly through the setting the context or the framework for this because I have been watching and listening to the presentations before your committee for the last month and a half, and I would say that this is going to be review, not new information to you about where we find ourselves. So I'm going to go quickly through these slides. I think you all know that in order to be competitive, Oregon must have an educated workforce as we move from an industrial age to a knowledge age. A question I would put to you that's on slide four, what percent of adult Oregonians have completed a four-year college degree? I mean, we may know that, and later you will hear from Graham Slater of the Employment Department, and he'll give you some more facts and figures about what our labor market looks like and what the preferred educational attainment is or is necessary for the jobs that we are creating. But given the question of a knowledge economy, slide four really presents to you the question of do we have enough Oregonians prepared? Slide five is what percent of adult Oregonians have only a high school diploma and what percent that's who have nothing beyond high school, and that's 38%. So we have more without a high school diploma than we have with a four-year degree. Or with only a high school diploma, I'm sorry. So slide six just brings that home when you look at what's your earning capacity given your level of education. And we recognize that not every job in Oregon requires a college degree, but almost all anymore are requiring at least some collegiate preparation or some post-secondary coursework. And you can see that the rate of unemployment is inversely proportioned to the number of, or to the level of education that you have. So the less education you have, the higher your unemployment and the longer your duration on unemployment. Slide seven then looks at a snapshot of Oregon's jobs and wages. And depending on what your level of education is, what you could expect to earn. Slide eight is a graph that talks about what students expect when they're in high school, whether they will aspire to go to college, whether they actually enroll, and how many of them take what's necessary at a minimum level to be admitted to college. So there seems to be a bit of a gap between aspiration, expectation, and actually stepping through the college door. Once they get to college, slide 9 gives you a picture of how much remedial work is done at 2 and 4 year, and actually at private 4 years as colleges and universities as well. Certainly in Oregon, the Oregon community colleges have seen no decline in the number of students who require at least some remedial coursework before they are able to take collegiate work. So next we have a question about, okay, so that may be theoretical and those might be interesting statistics, but how does it affect our economy? So let's look at slide 10, which talks about who pays the taxes. And one-third of all Oregon households have at least one member with a four-year college degree. What fraction of Oregon income tax revenues are paid by these households? So we end up with 55% of those individuals who are paying, so over half. Shall I pause, Mr. Chair?
Representative Beyer, would you like to join us here in the dais?
Actually, I can testify on this.
Okay.
You know, when you get a break.
Would you like to join this panel right now?
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, that's quite all right. For our televised audience, we have Representative Beyer, who, do you still, excuse me, you still sit on the Workforce Investment Board?
Yes, I do. For the record, Representative Terry Beyer, House District 12. I am a member, have been for 3 years, actually probably more than that. I started interim from 03, so I've enjoyed participating. And I did want to come in and say how much this program, I participated obviously all through the process. It was a great process, very inclusive. I sat in on a regional hearing. I didn't do all of them, but I followed all the steps through. It's been a great process. I think it's a great program for us. I know the message that we're hearing from the business community is the need for skilled workers, and I think that we have a lot of students that just aren't ever going to make it to college, and I think this is an important program for those that we've missed coming out of high school that are underemployed, need more training. So I think that this would be a great program. I know we had many discussions regarding the funding process of it. I don't think there's any doubt that people think that the proposed corporate minimum tax increase is probably a very appropriate way to fund this. I think the discussion's more on whether the business community wanted a corporate minimum tax increase, but I think that there seems to be a lot of consensus among the board that this is the direction that they want to go on it, and I think it really is a very appropriate way to go with this. So I certainly like to lend my support for this project. I did have, at one point, said, well, couldn't we have a pilot project to test it out, and found out that this basically is a pilot project. So I think that this is a great start. I think we'd be well served if we could even expand it at some point, even if we couldn't now. But again, I'd like to support it and encourage you to pass it out.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Beyer. And just as by way of a little background for the committee members, Representative Beyer is actually this body's representative on the Oregon's Workforce Investment Board. And, of course, our committee has been talking extensively about workforce development, and Representative Beyer has been committed to this. for a good many years now, and want to thank you very, very much for your willingness to be there virtually at every meeting and to lead the charge on workforce development. It's critically important, and it's critically important that the House of Representatives has someone there on that board. So thank you for your service.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed the work. I do. This may not be the place to remind the body, but there is an opening still for another representative, and I think it would be really beneficial if we could get that filled so that we would have our membership totally represented. So there's my little spiel on that. And you're probably not the one to say, but you know, anybody who can put some pressure on to fill that position would be great.
The challenge is there, Representative. We'll take it up. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Kim.
So I'm back on. I'm at slide 11. I'm still trying to set the context for why this is important. I'm not sure it's as necessary given the kind representative's comments, but. I did want to highlight on slide 12 that we do have nearly 400,000 Oregonians who have less than a high school diploma, and 32% of those have less than an eighth grade education. So we have work in front of us to skill up a good number of Oregonians, and that isn't counting the number of Oregonians who, through cyclical unemployment, lose their job and need more and expanded skills in order to keep current in the economy. So slide 13 is yet another question about what percentage of persons drawing unemployment in Oregon have less than a high school diploma, and the answer to that is 71%. And slide 14 talks about, is a further delineation of UI claimants, unemployment insurance claimants, who have less than a high school diploma, and what the likelihood of that population is to be unemployed. Slide 15 is more facts and figures about the cost of low literacy, both nationally and to the state. Slide 16 talks about some income drivers. What's the biggest single factor determining the difference in state per capita income? No wonder. I think the answer would likely be not Bill Gates, but rather the percent of adults with a four-year degree.
Are there going to be more test questions?
Slide 17 then talks about the impact of low education and low skills on public services. So what do we pay for? Either we assist in expanding the number of educated individuals in Oregon, or we pay in other ways. So slide 18, just to wrap up this portion, is that education does matter. And slide 19 is a picture of the work that has been ongoing between the Workforce Investment Board that Representative Byers spoke to, and slide 19 is really a picture of what's their mission. On the right-hand side is a picture of the State Board of Education, where Community Colleges and Workforce Development Department, that's my boss's, what their mission is, and then together the two boards of education, along with assistance and advice from the Workforce Board, their mission. And it's all about ensuring that Oregon has the best prepared workforce in the nation. And our target is that no less than 40% would have a bachelor's, no less than 40% would have a professional or associate certification, and no less than 20% would have a high school diploma. And from the statistics that I've shared with you, we have a ways to go on at least two of those, if not all three. So the workforce education and training system really looks at a continuum of public and private investment. And slide 20 is a picture of what and where resources are invested in the state currently around education and skill training. And as you move along to more and more specific occupational training, you have more and more private investment. All of it to ultimately get us to a family wage jobs. So why should we skill up Oregon? Well, I think we've laid out the case that our economy needs every worker, and they need to have a high level of skills. We need to be doing more for those individuals that do not have a high school diploma. And the training resources that we currently have, primarily federal, go for very targeted groups. Are you ready?
I'm ready. For the record, my name is Lita Colligan. I'm the Governor's Workforce Policy Advisor, and I thank you all for your time today as well, Chair Witt and Vice Chairs Riley and Lim and all the members of the committee. I'd like to stay for a minute on why Skill Up Oregon, slide number 21 that Cam started with, because I think we really have in front of us a very simple question. How do we skill up Oregon? I think the data that Cam put in front of you builds the case for why we need to do it. We know we have a lot of people without the skills they need. We know we're trying to get every Oregonian to a family wage job. I mean, we all share those goals. The question is, what's the possible solution? A lot of our education investment is going to part of that solution, but we still have a gap, and that's really why we're trying to put the Skill Up Fund in front of you and ask you for your support today. I think the big problem that we're trying to solve and that the board's been struggling with is this mismatch. Okay, we've got more high-skilled jobs than we have people for in our state right now. And that's hard to believe because we always hear, you know, Oregon's got such high unemployment and all kinds of other things. And we do sometimes, although our rate is way down now, almost to what would be considered full employment. But we still have a mismatch between these good jobs and the people who are unemployed. And you saw some of the statistics about who those people are. They need skills to be prepared for this set of jobs. And that's the problem we're trying to solve with this very targeted investment. Slide 22 talks about talent being the economic driver, and Cam referred a lot to some of those statistics, but I think as an economic developer in my past, and I think if you talk to any economic development person in the state, they'll tell you that right now the number one thing that companies are asking about when they locate, but also companies staying in Oregon or even thinking of adding new shifts or expanding here, is can I find the people? And that's really, the problem we're trying to solve. When Cam talked about the 40% that we think need to have a four-year degree or better to drive a knowledge economy and the 40% that need a two-year degree or an industry certificate, and then the 20% that we think should be prepared with a high school diploma maybe for some of the entry-level jobs, this skill up is about that middle 40%. It's about moving the larger group we have at the lower level into this middle category, really, of either a two-year certificate or two-year degree, an apprenticeship, journey card, a proprietary program that might give them an industry-recognized certificate to drive a truck or something else like that. It's really that 40% that's in the middle that we're really targeting. According to our seasoned research department in employment, which you're going to hear about in a minute, we're really facing quite a crisis, and that is not that every baby boomer is going to retire in the same year and all these 700,000 jobs are going to come open in the same year, but we do need to be thinking ahead and preparing for it. And if we're not taking some action here, we're going to really be caught with an economic situation that's going to be very untenable for the state. That's why on page 24, you have seen put in front of you the governor's plan that was developed by the workforce board for him, and it talks about the governor's vision. And this is a vision that he wants to share with you and that I think he shares with all Oregonians. And that's about Oregon being competitive but based on our workforce. If that's the number one economic driver, then that's where we need to target our resources. And when I talk about the governor sharing his vision, I'm really serious about that. This is not something that can just be driven by the governor's office. It takes leadership in the legislature. It takes the people of Oregonian understanding the need. So in the Workforce Board's plan, we've talked about increasing, and the governor's plan, we've talked about increasing investments in education and training, raising the rigor in the high school diploma. I mean, this is a plan that has to fire on many cylinders. And it talks about more degrees and certificates that could help be helped by the Skill Up Fund, and very targeted training that moves lower skill workers into higher skill jobs. When the governor introduced his recommended budget, he talked about it being the budget of hope and opportunity. We think the Skill Up Fund helps fulfill that hope and opportunity promise because it does the following things. It benefits populations that have fallen out of our other systems. Sometimes people talk about why we have this group of unemployed people who can't seem to get to these higher skill jobs, and a lot of it is about hope. It's about in rural communities feeling like there's going to be a good job for them, that jobs are going to be there over the long haul, that their skills are not going to become obsolete. And this is a targeted fund to help people in that category. Again, it targets high-wage, high-demand jobs. This is not a program that's going to prepare people for any job that's out there, nor is it going to put them in low-wage service jobs. You'll hear from Graham, but we are doing some analysis to really look region by region at where those high-demand jobs are, and we're going to match the training programs and the resources that clients get to help them fill those jobs at a regional level. This is a very targeted program. The governor likes it also because it builds on our existing workforce training system. Rather than starting a new program and starting a new operation somewhere or a new bureaucracy somewhere, we are trying to use our existing system, our state workforce board as the leadership and policy board, and our local workforce investment boards. These dollars will travel to those local boards, and they will help clients at the local level based on regional economic needs and regional plans. So this is a program that will build on our existing system, will not add another layer of administration, but will use that current administrative function that we have, and also will leverage federal dollars that those workforce boards already oversee. So they'll be able to package federal dollars with state dollars to help clients get where they need to go. It's also outcomes-based. We will be measuring job and career pathway placement, how we get people into these paths to these higher-wage jobs. We will also be looking at certificates and degrees that are acquired or attained as a result of a lot of hard work by these clients, and also wage gain. Did they, as a result of getting this training, earn more money, which is really what we're after here. The Skill Up Oregon Fund is just one piece of a broader plan, as I said before. It's a $10 million investment in the governor's budget right now, and as Representative Beyer mentioned, he has put that in his budget with funds from an increase in the corporate minimum income tax. That tax piece of it is not mentioned in this legislation. You are not actually passing this bill forward, if you do, with a funding source attached to it, but that's what the governor chose, and I think he did it very strategically. He used this funding source in his budget because he sees the direct relationship between the benefits that businesses will receive and the training that will be provided to Oregonians. And also, he is seeking a partnership with the business community to help us skill up our workforce. Businesses need the skilled workers, and they will be the primary beneficiaries of this targeted training investment. And also, in exchange, and this is some of the discussion that we've had with our workforce board, businesses want accountability, and they want return on their investment. And we think this is the type of program that can do that. I'm on page 28. We think that, as you've heard, that the Skill Up Fund will benefit our economy, our employers, our communities. It's a locally driven program, and the individuals who will gain additional skills. As I mentioned, it'll be implemented through the workforce boards. And one other feature that I think I haven't spoken about yet is we're asking the workforce boards to really do an assessment on individuals who would receive these resources. They will be assessed, and they will be looked at for whether they're work ready. And if they're not work ready for these high wage, high skilled jobs, that's when they'll be eligible for assistance. Slide 30 Cam mentioned the education enterprise and the outcomes we're shooting for there. I just want to reiterate that this Skill Up Fund is really a complementary program to the education enterprise investments. We can't do this without a good investment in K-12, in our high schools, and in our community colleges and universities. A lot of these folks will travel to the colleges for training and to other types of proprietary programs, but a strong investment across the education enterprise is essential to complementing this program. And also, last but not least, I think I'm pretty much close to the end here. I think I'd just like to reiterate one of the points. Cam gave you a lot of data about folks who are on unemployment insurance or receiving public health assistance and other things. This Hope and Opportunity program really has multiple features. It's going to give people skills, and we know that's the main focus of it, is the skill gain. But also, it really will help people come out of poverty. It'll move them from kind of cycling through low-wage work, hopefully, to getting skills that can take them to longer-term, higher-wage work. It will address literacy. If we do have clients coming into our WorkSource Oregon systems, and one of the problems in terms of attaining a good job will be literacy, we can help them with that as well. And also, it just builds a pipeline of skilled employees for our business community. We don't see this as a social service program. This is an economic development program. It's about growing our economy. Higher wages means higher payrolls, more money circulating in our economy, and more resources coming to the state to pay for other essential services. So I'm closing here with a quote from Ben Franklin, since he's a leader who was very concerned about return on investment. I want you to all think about this as a program that will give you a very high return on your investment. Thank you very much. I guess we're available to take questions if you have them.
Thank you very much to both of you. Questions or comments, Cam and Lita? Yes, Representative Dolan.
Either one of you. We've talked about pilot program, and at the regional level, what does that mean? Are there targeted areas in the state, or is this a statewide rollout?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahlem, we expect a statewide rollout. We just know that there are more people who could benefit from Skill Up Oregon than we will have resources for. So it is expected, and the bill actually talks about the distribution of the funds to the local boards and how we will arrive at a formula that does that. But it will be a statewide effort.
And one final question.
Please.
I might be asking the wrong people here, but has there been any look at, we lose, some say 34% of our kids from the time they leave the eighth grade until they graduate. That seems like it would be a target group. I'm not sure that Skill Up Oregon is the responsible agent, but is there any look at how we might retain that cadre of people?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahlem, you're correct. It is Skill Up Oregon is not envisioned to necessarily prevent the 8th through 12th grade dropout. It's more to be a catch, if you will, for those who have. But I would like to say that the Department of Education, the State Board of Education, the Workforce Board, and others are keenly interested in any number of initiatives and efforts that are designed to keep students enrolled in high school, because there is, I think, great research and evidence that once students drop out, it's most difficult to get them back and provide the skills that they need, and we really need to do more to keep them engaged and persisting in high school.
Yes, Lita.
Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem, I'd just like to address the pilot question briefly. As Cam mentioned, we could have proposed a Skill Up Fund bill that had billions of dollars in it. When you hear the numbers about the hundreds of thousands of people who have a high school diploma or less and who need help with skills and retraining, you realize how big this is. But what we were hoping to do, given the balancing act that all of you have to do with the many, many needs and the limited state resources, what we are hoping to do with this is serve around 3,000 people statewide. That's not a lot of people, given the hundreds of thousands of people who need help. So the reason we call it a pilot is because we're asking for a very limited resource so we can prove the concept of this approach, that we can use our workforce system, we can package customized responses for individuals, and we can see, are we able to really move people from low skill to high skill with a limited amount of training and a strategic investment that's targeted to certain occupations. So we want to come back to you with a success story and ask you to help us in a bigger way next session.
Representative Polby.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Thank you for being here today. You know, this subject matter, as you know, is of great interest to me, and I'm really excited about skilling up Oregon. It's something I think Will has Lita described, really boost our economy, and I know that we'll be working closely with Bob Repine and the Economic Development Department as well to make sure that we're on the same page and going forward. But in that regard, I'm wondering, you know, we're talking about identifying clusters, you know, at the regional level, and in this committee we've had a lot of testimony about our clusters and where the emphasis should be for our investments in economic development and workforce development for that matter. So I guess my question, when I'm reading the bill, it talks mostly about the targeted clusters that are identified by the regional boards and not the state boards. And so, you know, I get concerned that our regional boards, you know, are really paying attention to what we've heard about as far as our state clusters and our state targets, and I want to make sure that there's consistency going down to our regional levels. And I understand that, you know, many of our regions have slightly different industries in them, but overall I really think it's important that we keep that connection to what our state economists and what our state goals are, and I hope that our state board is very cognizant of that. And I don't see that written in this bill anywhere, that there's any kind of statewide oversight of these investments, and that's a little bit of a concern to me. So I hope that somehow we can address that.
Go ahead. Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, thank you for that question. We definitely see a statewide oversight and also a statewide infrastructure, if you will, related to clusters. We have been working as the Workforce Board and also the Governor's Office very closely between our departments of Community College and Workforce Development, Economic Development, Employment, Human Services. On a regular basis, we meet monthly to try and make sure that we have alignment between the programs we're offering. The reason that we talk about clusters at the regional level is because of the differences between our regions. You know, the clustering is about companies geographically locating together. So while the state may identify transportation equipment as one of the state's emphasis areas or big, you know, the big clusters, what we'll see is in Southern Oregon they're building boats, and that's part of the transportation equipment cluster. In Portland they're building barges, and, you know, in Central Oregon they're building airplanes. And so all of those, when the state's done their cluster analysis, are all grouped together, but the occupations at the regional level might be quite different, or the skills needed at the regional level might be quite different. So we are definitely doing analysis at the state level and providing guidelines to the regions, but allowing some customization, if you will, at the local level based on regional economy and regional economic plans. But there is definitely accountability. I mean, we've got the state, at least with all the programs we're doing federally now, too, the state provides the guidelines and sends the resources to the regions. But they go with guidelines, and they go with accountability coming back to the state and reporting back to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. So the data is collected, and the accountability is overseen by the state departments.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Thank you, Chair Witt.
I lost you.
No, you didn't. not for long. I just have a follow-up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's
we'll
okay.
We'll get back
okay.
to you.
Oh. You want to follow up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. Sometimes I'm confused. We have so many programs. And if I read this paper, we have a program, high school diploma requirement, which is a skill training. In their skill training, about $50 million. The career pathway, and which is $1.9 million. Work readiness certificate, which is $1.1 million. Career and technical training, which is almost $1 million. And plus the TANF and jobs program, and plus the jobs plus program. We've got so many programs. I'm sure each program has a targeted special set of people in the different circumstances, but it's confusing. Even I've been serving in the Trade and Economic Committee so many years. So many programs is confusing to me. Is there any way we can just put these programs under one umbrella? Maybe we might be able to do a better job and saving some cost of administration and plus many others. And it seems to me that some of them are targeting the same kind of people, even though different ages and different areas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I'm going to attempt to answer your
okay.
question. Some of the programs or investments that you articulated are in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development budget request that is now part of the governor's recommended budget. They are aspects of, I would say, one large program around the skill development of Oregonians. The Career Pathways is an investment in community colleges to help, I'm going to use a very technical term, chunk curriculum into smaller pieces that at the end of each piece is access to and commitment from the employer community to hire, so that you don't need a full year certificate, you don't need a 2-year associate's degree, but you might need 30 hours of bookkeeping and accounting to get a job in your regional economy. So the investment there is to help colleges do that work, to be closely connected with their employer and business community. The Workforce Readiness Certificate is an aspect of something that Lita mentioned, is an assessment. Right now, we take a lot on faith from people when they say they have one skill or another skill, and their attribution of whether that's a expert or novice skill that they have. Representative or Director Warner of the Employment Department will speak to you about the iMatch skills system that we have in the state. It's wonderful for people who are looking for work, wonderful employers for employers who are looking for talent in the state, but it is self-described skill. And so what we would like to have is an assessment that really pinpoints by a third party what that skill set is, and then be sure that we have the training and skills to make sure that individual can take a job. So, I mean, they are aspects of making sure that Oregonians have the skills they need to be competitive and productive in our economy. But having said that, I think when you roll a whole lot of things, if I were to say that I think you should put under the same umbrella or in the same department TANF and the jobs program, then you're bringing an awful lot of other support services and a lot of other aspects of public assistance and public support that currently aren't part of a department that primarily delivers training. So I think that there is, even though it's messy, you know, the workforce development system is messy, but we have historically said, you are expert at this, go about doing that. Don't try to do everything for everybody. Do the piece that you are particularly good at. So the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development does not do a lot of public support. It does a lot of training and skill assessment, because that's what we think we do best. Employment doesn't do training either. They do labor exchange. They connect people to jobs and employers to workers, because that's what they do best. So that's a long answer to your question, but it's at least our, it's at least my rationale for why it is the way it is.
One follow-up question, Mr.
Please.
You confused me more. Anyway, could you give us the differences of this program and with the Jobs Plus program? And the Jobs Plus program is a program that the company hires certain people, and the state gives certain amount of money for them to be trained in the, actually in the job location. But this one is completely new program, skill up those people. But still, Jobs Plus program look like almost the same thing, and doing actually working, and then after 6 months and 1 year, you know, they are becoming independent while learning in their actual jobs. So how do you see the differences in it?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, I think there are some very basic fundamental differences between the two programs. And I guess I want to start with that the Skill Up Fund is a new program for the state if it becomes funded. But it's not a new activity for the workforce training system. The system does provide training for workers now, just with very limited amounts of federal dollars. I think the fundamental difference here is that we're really focused on providing skills, putting the resource in the skill building rather than the resource in the wage subsidy. Okay, that's a fundamental difference. We're saying we think the investment can be better spent if it goes for the training versus paying for part of the salary. Okay, and I think that part of the reason the governor hasn't supported the Jobs Plus program last session nor this session is because he thinks that this investment in training is a preferable approach, and he also didn't see that the results from the Jobs Plus program were sufficient enough to reauthorize it, or it's concluded in his budget again this session. So I think that's the fundamental difference. Also, things have changed since the Jobs Plus program was initiated many years ago, and we are in a different employment situation. Right now, we're facing more of a labor shortage. People can find work. They just find low-wage work. Okay, so we are trying to help them. A lot of the people that will get help through Skill Up will probably be employed. They're just going to be underemployed. They won't be in employment that will give them a family wage. And so what we're hoping is that by providing them with the skill training, they will move into higher wage employment. This is much more about targeting where we have gaps in the economy versus just getting somebody a job in any employment situation. So it's much more targeted, it's much more focused on skill training than on wage subsidy.
Okay, just one comment, Mr.
And
yes, Ed, please.
You may have other.
Yes, and you, later you mentioned that the Jobs Plus program, that's the way in the past, it might not working at this time. But I'd like to find out exactly where the Jobs Plus program is and how that has been working, or if it's still working now, or it is not needed, or do we need to augment that program in the future. I don't have any clear data of it, and I'd like to see that, and we might be able to determine that later.
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, we can come back to you with some data about the program, and I know that Director Warner is going to be speaking too, and she can probably address that if you'd like to bring some questions to her as well. We are continuing to support a Jobs Plus program for TANF recipients. Okay, these are people that have multiple barriers to employment, and we do think that potentially they may need a subsidized wage to enter into employment in addition to receiving some of the resources, possibly from the Skill Up Fund, to help them with skill training. So there is continues to be a Jobs Plus program for TANF recipients, but not for unemployment insurance recipients.
Thank you.
Representative Holby, I think I might have cut you off earlier. If I did, I
apologize. That was probably a good thing.
Did you have a follow-up?
Well, I have another question perhaps.
Okay.
I'm looking at the proposed amendments to the bill specifically. And, you know, I've always kind of been troubled with the connection between community college and workforce development and our apprenticeship and training division with Boley, and it doesn't seem like there's any, I won't say any. It doesn't seem like there is enough cooperation or coordination between those different agencies and workforce development, too. So my question is, in going through your amendments, when you identify what the boards may use these grants to do, you're always saying contract with regionally accredited education providers. My question is, are our state approved apprenticeship programs considered regionally accredited education providers?
Chair Witt, Representative Holby, I need to check. I know that some are and some are nationally accredited. And our intention here is not to delimit where training can be provided, but rather ensure that the training that these individuals receive is of sufficient quality. And so we were attempting not to simply list community colleges as the place where you had to go, but we were looking to expand the training providers that were available, at the same time maintain a level of quality for these individuals who would receive the training. But we can certainly revisit the question. Community colleges currently serve over 4,000 apprentices at providing the general ed and related training for apprenticeship. Certainly, there is room for improvement in any relationship, but the Skill Up Oregon Fund was not, the amendments that are in front of you were not written in any way to exclude quality providers, apprentice or otherwise. And so if we need to modify this language, I would be happy to talk with you about that.
Yes, Representative.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. So I appreciate you your willingness to discuss that, you know, because you're talking about apprenticeship and the quality of programs and the community college system serving 4,000 apprentices. Do you have any figures that compare the community college apprentices that you serve and their completion ratios into journeyman status as compared to the approved programs that are operated under the Bureau of Labor and Industries?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, some of them are the same. Many of the individuals that are enrolled in apprentice programs in the community college are in partnership with labor councils around the state and training centers around the state. I will certainly look and bring back to you the information that you've requested on completion rates.
Follow up, and so I'm going to switch gears here just a little bit, if the chair would indulge me for another question. So in light of, you know, what we're doing, I'm just very concerned that the way this bill is written, that it is excluding most of the approved apprenticeship programs operated through Boley, and goes to apprenticeship programs that where the community colleges are serving as the trainer, and so that part is a little bit troublesome to me, and in light of another part of this bill, you're also identifying that the funds that can go through this, that can be assessed, can be used for administrative costs at the community college level and also at the regional investment board levels. So I'm wondering what if we should consider putting caps on the administrative costs of these funds in this particular bill, and is there a reason why we shouldn't put some sort of caps on administrative costs to make sure that the dollars that we're investing aren't going to just back into the general fund of the colleges, but actually going directly to the training programs that this bill is intended to support.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, yes, we certainly could list a percentage that would be for administration. We contemplated that and thought it would be best to have it in rule rather than in law. As we said, we haven't done this before. Typically, the federal job training programs have a 10% administrative cap. We envisioned that it would be similar, because if you're going to change the percent, then some other systems have to change in order to manage for it. So we just hadn't delineated it in the bill because we thought we would do it in rule. I'm not opposed to having it identified in the bill, and it would be right now as envisioned, it would be for administration at the local and regional board level as they manage the funds. Okay. I would also like to add that the bill as it is constructed provides for 1 year of training at a cap amount of $3,000. It would certainly be a way to start an apprentice in a journeyman or on their way to a journey card, but 1 year is not going to get us a journey of any kind. And so I think that is you're helping us think through how to expand the language to be as inclusive as we intended and to skill up all the people that are possibly eligible for this program. So I just leave that for me to think about and also have on the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Giron.
Well, the nice thing about going last is most of the topics that you wanted to cover have already been covered. So I'd like to touch on a couple things. First of all, I share Representative Holvey's concern about the apprenticeship problems with this bill. I also share Representative Lim's concerns about consolidation of programs, and it seems like instead of piecemealing a solution to the problem, maybe we need to come up with a holistic approach. The third thing is we had testimony from Blue Mountain just last week about they had a program and we were trying to earmark money for agricultural subsidies within the community college system, and actually it's too bad Representative Barnhart's not here, but it was one of those questions. One of his responses: be careful what you ask for, because by separating the funds in a lean year they might be cut. So my ultimate question then comes back to funding for this. Why do we need this bill, and why can't we just fund it directly out of the community college fund? And if we just give you a certain, say we give you what we'd give you for community college plus 10, so that we could maybe just do away with some bookwork here.
Chair Lim, Representative Gerard. I think that you brought up quite a few issues, so I think maybe I'll take them one at a time. The holistic approach, I concur, and I heard this with Representative Lim as well, and I think we are trying to take a holistic approach. That's why we've built upon an existing system. All we're asking with this bill is to bring the policy issue here really is bringing a state investment of resources in to complement what we already have working in our federal programs, because that's where the gap is. It's on the training side. We've got resources to do labor exchange and some of the other things, but we don't have the money for training. Okay, so we feel like it is a holistic approach because we're building on our existing systems. Second, I really appreciate the comments about apprenticeship because it is certainly our intent with this bill to support people entering into apprenticeship programs or completing them in whatever stage they're at. So if there's any language in there that would prevent someone from doing that, we certainly want to change it. And, our intent was to try and put some language in that would be broad enough to accommodate all those types of training partners and not just to identify the colleges as the trainer. So if the language isn't right and we have that broader intent, we need to work with you on that. And then why not just put the dollars into the colleges? We could do that, but this was an intentional approach to offer multiple training providers to individuals rather than a single training provider. So we could add it to the community college budget, but that's exactly what this is intended to do. The money from this in the governor's budget would be an additional $10 million in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. They have existing relationships with all the colleges where they could send money for training if we decided to go that route, or they have relationships with all the workforce boards who would then disperse the money to people that come into the system. They're sort of the funnel and the pass-through for both of those systems. But again, we're trying to build upon our existing systems and leave the client and the providers at the local level the opportunity to customize training for them that would be beyond what the colleges potentially might offer. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you. I heard either Rita or Ken mentioned this is the pilot program. And I'm not sure, is this a really pilot program or a temporary program or just a continued permanent program? If it's a pilot program, I didn't see in the bill this is a temporary, just it's going to be added in the statute. So how do you define this program?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, I think that concept actually originated with Representative Beyer in our discussions at the Workforce Board and the Legislative Committee. She suggested that we come to you and say this is a pilot program to start small and be able to prove the concept and come back. I mean, essentially every program is a pilot program if it comes up for reauthorization of its budget biennially. It's intended to be a permanent program, but we want to prove the value and come back to you with a report about the outcomes and seek resources in the next biennium just like we have this time around. So it's only a pilot in the sense that we're trying to test a concept of putting more dollars into training targeted at high demand occupations.
Okay, just I want to make a comment.
Yes.
And this looks like a good program, but I'm really concerned that creating the new program will greatly help. I'm sure this will help, but sometimes I'm wondering in my mind, maybe we might be able to augment already program existed with this money, might work out better instead of creating a new program. I don't see any clear picture, clear vision of this program, even though I'm sure it will help. That's my just a thought at this time. At this time, I'd like to just put into the record my comment. Mm-hmm.
Vice Chair Riley, you've been very patient.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And patience pays off, as Representative Gerard mentioned. A lot of things have been brought up that I wanted to bring up. But I just wanted to add my take on this and get your response. I think this is a very good program, and I think I see exactly where it's intended to help. I, however, share some of the same concerns as Representative Lim and others. and that is the splintering, if you will, of our, and we're guilty of it too. We have a workforce committee, we have an education committee, we have, you know, we're guilty of the same thing. But it still concerns me why, you know, I don't know why we workforce isn't part of the education committee. I don't know why workforce. I don't know why workforce is. I don't know why community colleges is not part of the Department of Education. There's all of these questions that I have as well. There's a splintering, and is there some way that we can be assured, if you will, that all these different splinter groups are coordinating and we're not duplicating services? Because I see that as a real problematic thing. I think that it's just human nature. If there's two groups who have responsibility for training in any way, there's going to be some turf problems, and there are going to be overlaps, and we're going to be spending money on the same thing twice. I just want to see if there isn't some way that we could be assured that you're not doing the same thing we are, if you will.
Well, I'll take the first stab at that, Chair Witt, with your permission, Representative Holby. I think maybe we're stumbling on semantics here, because what's new is the state's investment in training, okay? What's not new is the systems that we're trying to build upon. Okay, our workforce system, it's not just the state legislature that has splintered committees, okay? We start out at the federal government level, and we receive money from all different kinds of departments, and they come to us to different departments at the state, and that causes some of this, you know, a program here, a program there kind of feeling. But at least for the workforce system, their job and the State Workforce Investment Board's job, too, is to try to be the entity that pulls all those things together. We have an integrated workforce development system in the state. It includes community colleges and workforce development. It includes the employment department. It includes DHS. It includes all these other groups. It includes BOLI. We all are working together on this task that we have of trying to skill people up. So I think what we're asking you here for is an infusion of resources into the training, okay, skilled training targeted to high demand occupations where we see a gap. Okay? It doesn't mean that we don't need resources in our colleges to provide those programs. We still have to make the investment. There's two pieces to the investment. The money that travels with the client to the training institution, and the money that we have to put into our infrastructure to provide the education. Okay, the education budget is doing more of this. What we're asking you to do with the Skill Up Fund is to build on our existing workforce system that would do an assessment of an individual who's kind of fallen out of the systems and provide them the resource to access these other parts of the system. It really is much more integrated than it seems, and someday we'll show you some charts that challenge us every day in terms of trying to align services. Not sure if that helped or not either, but it's a complex system.
Chris,
sure.
Follow up if I may.
Please, Vice Chair.
Thank you. I don't want to leave you with the impression that I'm not in favor of this program. I am. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good program, and I understand the complexities. It's just that I would very much like to see how things fit together, how you all coordinate and who's doing what. And if there's some way available for me and other members of the committee to see, I'm very visual. I like a chart. And if there is such a thing, or you could create such a thing without too much expense, then I would like very much to see that. Thank you.
Chair Witt and Representative Riley, actually, we can be most pleased, as Lita said, to bring you pictures. And as I said, the system as it is funded federally is a mess. And we do our level best once it gets here to coordinate it. But what we also did in response to a budget note from the 2001, I believe it was 2001 legislative session, was report to the legislature on unnecessary duplication that existed in the workforce development system. And that was done for us because we have a statewide data system that looks at these agencies that Lita has articulated and then looked at who is serving who with what kind of service. So I'd be happy to also bring, we've hit the refresh button there at the Employment Department's research section and redid that look at where is the unnecessary duplication, or is it really necessary for a client that is receiving public assistance through TANF that they also have assistance from workforce development, they also have assistance from the employment department, and that all of that duplication is really helpful to get the participant back into the labor force. So we can bring that forward as well.
Thank you. I'll be expecting a visit from you.
Representative Dolan.
I think I'm on the same page, but I had the opportunity to visit with Cam yesterday. I see here a vehicle that I like, but I also want to look through the prism of the person that comes in the door looking for skilling up. And I want the language in here that says that that person will have opportunity to see every option. We had people sit there the other day that tell us they have a shortage of 70,000 people with training, a four-year training, not free, but paid. And in the end of that, their goals are the same as yours. And I want to be certain that I can see that we're including that group of people. And if it's a line in the bill, that's where I am. And I know you're there. But because we have such a far-flung enterprise, and this is our opportunity to speak, I think all of us are saying we want to be sure that when our person comes through the door, that every opportunity is afforded to them to make the cornucopia of to see the cornucopia of selections they have. And I think that's what I want to see is that we've heard of some wonderful programs, and apprentice programs are just, I think that was the major one, but that's where I am with the issue. I want to be sure that that program gets its just dessert or advertising or exposure.
Thank you, Representative Dolan. Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to follow up with Representative Riley's comments. Just to be clear, I'm very supportive of this program as well. And want to see it work. No pun intended. I really want to see this program provide some greater skills to our workforce. We all share that goal, I think. And so I just wanted to make sure I put that on the record, because my questions may seem like, I'm trying to tear this apart, and I'm really not. I'm trying to identify how it could work better. In my mind. And so I just wanted to say that for the record as well. But, and I want to also just, I'm still concerned about this administrative cost thing, and I just want to make sure that I was clear about that, because the way I read the bill that, I can see, the Community College Workforce Development Department taking 10% of the $10 million, and then on down the line, the state investment board and all the regional investment boards taking 10% again, and what are we left with at the end of the day to go into actual training? So I just want to make sure that we take a close look at administrative costs in this program, so the dollars really are invested where we need to invest the dollars. And I'm cognizant that we have to have some administration too. And following up once again on Representative Riley's comments about wanting workforce development to, be You know, he doesn't know why it's not in education. I wonder why it's not in economic development, and so how do we have a cohesive look at workforce development when we have so many different agencies involved in this, including BOLI and economic development, the employment department, community college, and I really see the governor's office as being that synergy. I guess that's Lita's position is trying to coordinate all that and making sure that we do identify this potential duplication, that, you know, we shouldn't be doing the same thing twice and having agencies battling each other, you know, for, you know. I guess that's my comment, but I really look forward to this program getting up and going, we really need to do that. We've had a lot of testimony on identifying healthcare as being one of the huge things we need to invest in, and I know the community colleges are involved in that. And those are high-paying jobs. That makes sense across the state in all our regional areas, I believe. So. My hat's off to you. It's a tough job to try to bring all this together and move forward. And I am supportive of the bill, but would like to see some work to make sure it's inclusive.
Representative Gerard.
Well, since everybody's making comments, I might as well put my two bits in right there. Actually, I share the concerns that I think that almost all of us have. But my point is, in Section 2, all monies go to the Department of Community Colleges. So, in essence, what we're doing here is earmarking money, which we had testimony last week with agriculture and how we were all very supportive of agricultural work-based programs and how we wanted to earmark money for that. And so if we're going to go that way with this, I would also like to go that way with agricultural products as well and earmark money that way. If we're not going to earmark money, then I think we should be unified and not earmarking money.
Good point, Representative Gerard. Any further questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. I know that we have some amendments already. We're anticipating some additional ones, and I didn't know if either one of you wanted to discuss those today or whether you'll be back Friday to talk to us about those.
Mr. Chair, I think given the conversation today, I'd like to hold on that and do that on Friday, and hopefully by that time we will have I will have had an opportunity to talk to members about how to shore up the language.
Very good. Thank you both so very, very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And signed up next, we have the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. And I see Carl here. Carl, are you coming up with anyone? Or are you flying solo today?
I think they're going to send me up alone.
All right.
It's a wise decision on their part.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chair Riley, Vice Chair Lim, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carl Califano, and I am the Vice President of Operations at ATI Wacheng in Albany, and I'm also the Vice Chair of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. And I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to share with you, from a business perspective, some of the concerns that we have going forward, the situations that we find ourselves in, and the need to begin doing things like the Skill Up Oregon program and other things to address some very, very critical needs that we have in business which impact the citizens of this state. Two things are different in the last 10 years in the business community than it was when I first started working. One is because of the huge gains in technology, businesses can literally locate anywhere they want to locate. There's no longer regional things that tie businesses down to certain places that chain them to those places. They can go anywhere they want. Secondly, like it or don't like it, we are truly in a global economy. We compete globally for virtually every product we make. If we're going to compete in that way in the state of Oregon, then we're going to compete based on the skills and the capabilities and the talents of our workforce. And if there's one thing that we have a shortage of right now as we go out and look for opportunities to grow and expand here in this state, it is the skills of a workforce. And for the most part, one of the biggest areas of concern that we have is not in the four-year degree area. That certainly is a place that we want to keep focus on because those skills are critical, but it's in the skills of what seems to me to be a forgotten segment of our population, and that's the population that doesn't achieve a four-year degree, which represents 70% of the people in the state of Oregon. And yet those are exactly the kind of skill positions that we are lacking in, and those are exactly the kind of skill positions that we need if we're going to compete globally. As we stand right now in my business, the business that we have, finding skills such as millwrights, electricians, instrumentation techs, welders, things that enable us to grow our business, and I'm speaking primarily now in the manufacturing segment. And that manufacturing segment is the segment of the work and of the jobs that really is the crucial provider of family wage jobs, jobs that we must make sure that we keep in this state. And so we are looking in business as to how do we help and how does the state step up to assure that the citizens of this state come out of their schooling with the skills necessary to enable us to succeed. And that's something that the Skill Up Oregon is one step in. There are much more than that that has to take place. We can't ignore the apprenticeship programs. We certainly must address the K-12 system, which is the major trainer of the workforce. That's what comes through. But I wanted to take the opportunity to express our support for this bill that is a small but critical step at beginning to prepare the citizens of our state to fill the critical need for skilled employees in our businesses, particularly manufacturing.
And Carl, before I turn it over to our next panelist, I'd like you to be thinking just mentally here for a minute, because you and I had a discussion here yesterday about urgency in moving forward on workforce development, and I'm going to ask you to share that urgency here with our committee in just a minute. So, okay.
Good morning. My name is Dave Williams. I apologize for being just a little late getting here. Traffic out of Portland was a little bit of a mess. I'm vice president of Northwest Natural and in charge of our utility services, and also on the board of Oregon Workforce Investment Group. And I'm here, I couldn't probably articulate any better than Carl really has, but I'm here also to ask for your support in this bill, and also to just recognize that all of the people or constituencies that I typically come in contact through my associations with some of the business community events, such as the Oregon or the Portland Business Alliance, we are all concerned about how we are able to bring workers into the workforce, and particularly into my company at Northwest Natural, but other companies in the manufacturing sector that are ready to go to work at the moment they come into our company, so that we can continue to be competitive. Although Northwest Natural is not so much concerned about the global competitive environment, the people that we do serve, however, are, like Carl and the other manufacturing companies that we serve. So we are connected in that way. And we are really hopeful that the support that we're able to give our manufacturing businesses and all those other businesses that will benefit by having the Skill Up program for workers is important. So just wanted to lend my support there and also address any questions that you might have.
Questions or comments for our panel? Representative Holby, I see you working on something there.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've exhausted our questions in the last panel. So I appreciate you gentlemen being here. I think it's really important and appreciate your participation in this, because I think you bring a perspective of really delivering the goods and making sure that we have the kind of workforce that enables industry, manufacturing specifically. I think we're really struggling with having that skilled workforce. Seems to be disappearing, as we do with the skilled trades as well. And there is an urgency that we recognize on this panel, I'm sure, from previous testimonies. And just want to, you know, just reiterate my thanks to you for serving in your capacities to give your insights into our economy and trying to deliver a better standard of living for Oregonians. I just really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to toss out that question again. As business leaders, could you make suggestions to us? Can you tell us the importance and the urgency to move forward with new paths to workforce development?
Thank you, Chairman Witt. Yes, I would like to speak on that. And I want to speak first as a business person, and that is on the urgency, is that we're right now in a strong, growing economy. And we're going to expand our business. As a business person, we're going to expand it, and we need to expand that business rapidly to meet the demand that we have out there. So as a business person, we're going to do that. And I speak secondly as an Oregonian. I desperately want that expansion to be here, which is a function of our sense of urgency and being able to step up to what we need to do to create the workforce and the skills in the workforce that will enable us to grow here. The sense of urgency comes from that in times of growing economies, when people expand and grow and build their facilities. The converse on that is probably in the political environment, the time that we get really, really concerned about training is in down economies when people are unemployed and we want to do something about it. And so there's almost an inverse relationship in the sense of urgency. So as a person who sat and sits and has for the last couple of years on the Workforce Investment Board, I don't, if Representative Lim is confused about all this stuff, I don't have a clue how all this stuff works. I don't have a clue what the agencies are. I don't have a clue any of it. Here's what I know. Unless we can address these questions and issues that we've brought up in a very, very rapid fashion, in an effective fashion, and begin stepping up to the undisputed need to increase the quality of our education and our training to provide our workers, our citizens, with the skills that enable our businesses to grow, if we can't do that rapidly, then we will lose in this global economy these jobs and these positions. I find very little disagreement in the need. I find huge amounts of disagreement in how we go about it. And my sense of urgency is we need to drive past that. We need to find out how this happens, because the end of our ability to do this with a sense of urgency will really tell the tale about whether we're truly serving the citizens of the state that we're supposed to be taking care of. It's urgent. If it takes 2 legislative sessions, 3 legislative sessions, if it takes 2 or 3 years to get through this stuff, it's too late. Someone else will step in and take our jobs. That's a guarantee. And we don't want that to happen. So that's kind of my message of urgency, and that's kind of where I'm at.
Yes, Representative Geron.
Thank you, and I appreciate your comments. You made some references before about K through 12. We've heard a lot of testimony about the relevancy of vocational training and maybe apprenticeships in 11th and 12th grade. Do you have any feelings about that? I know it's a little bit different than this bill, but I'd just be interested in your comments.
Yes, Chair Witt and Representative Gerard, I certainly do. One of the things that's true, a lot of times when we talk about K through 12, we talk about preparing every student for college. Not sure that's exactly what our goal ought to be, but one of the things I do know for sure is that there is a certain shortage of apprenticeship journeyman type trades. But the kinds of skills and the kinds of abilities that someone needs to be able to get through a journeyman program are very, very similar to the same kinds of skills that a student must have to go to college. Now, those skills, the base and foundation of those skills, don't come grade 8 through 12. They come K through 8. And so the overall process has got to be talking about the new generation of workers, which, whether it's apprenticeship programs or whether it's simply high value-added operations people, have to have a much higher level of skills in reading comprehension, mathematic abilities, problem-solving skills, work ethic, understanding of business. And so they tie in very strongly. If we don't address K through 12, then we'll spend a lot of time talking about rework programs to handle the kids that come to K through 12 and aren't equipped to work.
Yes, Representative Holden.
Thank you. And I appreciate your comments, because that's one part of this particular bill that I just, you know, really think is applicable to our entire workforce and our entire business community is really, you know, training individuals in work readiness, literacy, and basic skills required to overcome barriers to employment. And I take it right out of the bill, and that's the message you're delivering right there, and I couldn't agree with you more. That's that is you know, a real crucial point, because a person in manufacturing or in a skilled trade or even in a professional trade, if they don't have those basics and the reliability that comes with having that work readiness and the literacy, they're not going to survive in any of our industries. And that is an absolute crucial point you've made there, and I appreciate that.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much, Chair Witt. I'm sorry I was pulled out. You know, I value your testimony, and it's really good, even though I hate to miss part of your testimony, but if it's recorded, I'd like to hear it again. Anyway, this Skill Up program, this looked like a good program, and I don't think anyone will dispute that, but how to get there is the issue, as far as I'm concerned. In your professional opinion, as a businessman, also vice president of the Wah Chang and plus many others, do you think this program should be administered through the Mount Community College or any others, or do you think it's much better, like the company Wah Chang or any other company, they can train real skill-up workers actual in the real world? Which is, do you think, is that we can expect a better result?
Yes, Chair Witt and Vice Chair Lim. There are probably pros and cons to both sides of that. One of the things that I think are important from a business standpoint, and I'll speak a little bit pragmatically about it, is what I need is a finished product. I can't afford, as a businessman, to be faced with a growing need and then have to bring in people and begin training them, cover the cost of going and doing that. As business changes, we need to be able to go out and have people that are prepared with a full range of skills that can step into those jobs and enable us to really get moving. In times where you can afford the luxury of that, where you can afford to bring people in and train them in place and do that, it quite often it's times that you can't bear the overhead burden of carrying the extra costs. And then the times when it's growing and you have opportunities to grow, you don't have the luxury of time to train. And so fundamentally what I think is a value and would be a huge competitive advantage for the state of Oregon is to be able to provide workers to businesses that are ready to step out into those jobs and begin contributing very rapidly because they have those skills. And so I'm supportive of programs like Skill Up that begin training people, providing the skills, and then enable them to come in prepared to add value to the companies that they're in.
Please.
And I'm not sure how do we define the Skill Up. that skill up, the program we are looking at this time is not really high technical skill of people. If someone dislocated or someone wants to advance more higher a position, or in such as a such skill we are talking about. And these people are not going to help you in any way. So I think we need to look at the skill up program in a broader sense, not just someone people dislocated and looking for jobs, but that we need a whole range of skill ups, from mediums, from to higher, from the higher to extreme higher. This is so many steps should be, and I understand the skill up we are talking about is not necessarily the higher end, but from the low end, maybe going just a little bit higher. And maybe we might be able to discuss that issue a little later.
Yeah. Anything additional? Gentlemen, I just I want to comment on the actually the number of comments that I've heard about your leadership on OWIB from your partners, and the extent to which folks in the labor community as well as in government want to work with you because of the type of leadership that you've shown on OWIB and the value that you place on your partners. So when people want to work with you, great things can be accomplished. And I thank you for that style of leadership very much and for your service. Thank you for appearing before our committee today.
Thank you, Chairman.
Next, we have up Graham Slater from the Employment Department. And Graham, since Lita's still here, I can't miss the opportunity. It wouldn't work. I couldn't stir things up if she wasn't here. But she told us earlier that we were going to be hearing from some well-seasoned people from the Employment Department. So, anyways, with that, welcome. She's leaving the room now.
Mr. Chair, my director is also in the back of the room, so I just won't touch that comment. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Graham Slater, and I think at least several of you already know me. I'm the administrator of the Employment Department's Workforce and Economic Research Division, and I'm going to cut my comments a little shorter than what I think I was asked to do, simply because of the time. I know there's other people to testify. Just for those that really haven't run into us before, pretty much all of the workforce and economic information for Oregon either starts life or comes from our division. The unemployment rates for the state and each of your counties, employment trends in manufacturing, construction, pretty much every other industry, average wages in different industries and occupations, and most relevant for today, employment projections that help students choose careers and also help colleges and others choose training plan training programs, and sometimes special surveys that help us understand the skills that businesses need and the kinds of benefits they offer their employees and much more. A few weeks ago, when you were first starting, our director, Lori Warner, shared with you the table and the graph that are on the front, pages 1 and 2 of the handout that I just gave you. You've already heard a lot this morning. I won't reiterate some of the things I was planning to say, except to point to that table on the front. And if you look at the bottom line, where it's bolded, total employment, you can see that in the next 10 years, we're projecting growth openings, which are openings because our state continues to grow. More businesses are opening than closing. More businesses are expanding than contracting. We're projecting total growth openings of about 250,000 over the next 10 years. So Oregon will need that many people simply to fill the jobs created by growth. But that's only about one-third of the picture. The next column over shows you that what we call replacement openings, and the classic example would be retirements. There are other components, but that's the classic big example right now in our history, is over 400,000. And I've highlighted on my copy four lines up from the bottom. If you look at production workers there, production occupations, you can see that we will need about 8,000 new production workers because of growth, yes, slow growth, in industries like manufacturing and some others. But we'll need 32,000 new production workers to take the place for replacement openings, largely because of retirements. So we wanted to just share and remind you of some of the information that Laurie shared with you a few weeks ago, to say these are some of the situations we face. It's very easy to think, well, you know, manufacturing and some of these more traditional industries are growing slowly in Oregon, and so to think there isn't much of a need. But if you lose some of the highly skilled manufacturing workers because they're retiring, there is, as you've heard from numerous people, there's a huge need, because we've got to find the workers to replace those retirees, not just to fill the growth openings. Now, with that in mind, going right to House Bill 2206, our division has collaborated with the Governor's Office and with the Oregon Workforce Investment Board to help develop criteria for two of the key parts of the bill, two parts of the bill that really kind of set the basic foundation for the later decisions that will decide who gets trained in what kinds of occupations. First of all, the bill requires that the State Workforce Investment Board create a list of high-demand occupations, and that's Section 3, Subsection 3. And my staff and I, we've suggested that any occupation projected to have more than the median number of total job openings could be and should be considered as a high-demand occupation in a particular region. And I want to emphasize a couple things there. One is that I said total openings. So this is not about economic growth openings only. This is saying what is the total projected need for that occupation because of growth and because of replacements, retirements, and so on. Some of you may be wondering, so what's the median? And put very simply, if you list all the occupations in a region from the one with the most openings to the one with the least, you take the one in the middle, that's the median. So we are taking a very broad view, and I think that comes back to some of the earlier questions. We're suggesting, and the Workforce Board's subcommittee has agreed with this, we're suggesting a really broad view on which kinds of occupations could be included in that high demand definition, because for some small rural regions, there could be very small occupations that you only need a handful of people, but they are critical. Someone earlier mentioned millwrights. If you don't have enough millwrights, the mill may close, and now you've got 200 or 300 people out of work, but you only needed a very small number of millwrights, and we need to make sure the training's there for those. A second thing in the House bill is very specific, and that's in Section 3, Subsection 7, where it says that the training would be for jobs that pay at least the median wage. So that's where you get this high demand, high wage dual requirement. And so that one's easy. The median wage, you just list all the jobs in the region, highest to lowest wage, you take the middle, that's the median. So we're proposing, and again, it's our suggestion from a data perspective, the Workforce Board is proposing, that we take a very simple approach to this. High demand, high wage means more than the median number of openings, more than the median wage. And those occupations would fit the criteria. I do want to emphasize that what we proposed is that the Workforce Board's list would be by region. In other words, we will be looking at the high-demand, high-wage occupations for every one of the 15 workforce regions in Oregon. This would not be a single statewide list. We believe that's really important so that the fund can be effective across all of Oregon in those very small rural areas as well as in the large urban ones. And I'd like to give you a couple of examples. If we were to choose just a statewide list, state only, and then apply it, force it on all the regions, there would be no occupations at all in the Chairs region that would qualify for these funds, because the Chairs region, Workforce Region 1, Clatsop, Columbia, and Tillamook counties, is small enough that none of their occupations have enough openings projected that they would meet that statewide threshold. So we felt it makes a lot more sense to say to the regions, whatever is important and growing and needs replacement workers in your region is where you would presumably put some of your training dollars. Similarly, on the wages, if we were to apply the median wage from Region 2, which is Multnomah, Washington counties, to someplace like Region 13, Baker, Union, Wallowa counties, you'd have a pretty tough time finding occupations, because the median in Multnomah and Washington is about $15 an hour, and the median in Baker, Wallowa, Union is about $11 an hour. So what's a high-wage, high-demand occupation in La Grande is very different to what's a high-wage, high-demand occupation in Beaverton, and we wanted to have the flexibility there that the locals can choose their programs. We do have lengthy lists. There are 700 occupational classifications in Oregon. We have lengthy lists here that I'd be very happy to share with any of you. looking at the time, probably not a wise idea to do that this morning, because I think we'll go right to 700 discussions of different occupations and why the numbers are the way they are. But I'm happy to share those anytime. Before I close, let me just share two what I think are important things. First, that the high-demand, high-wage occupations, they form the starting point for the regional decision-makers then to choose which exact training they're going to fund. And the bill has a lot of other criteria that the regional policymakers would use to choose that. And then second, that the criteria agreed on by the Oregon Workforce Investment Board Committee also includes some exceptions. So what I've shared with you are kind of the basic ground rules that people have agreed on, but there are some exceptions, and that would be three examples. If an occupation is determined really important, essential to a region's economic well-being, as long as it paid more than the high wage, then it could still be considered, even if it wasn't in the high demand group. And again, millwright could be an example that a region might bring and say, we've just got to have this, and we're not finding the people with the training. Another one would be occupations that are so new, they're what we call emerging, that we don't have good data on them. And we wanted to have the opening there for some industry group, some other experts, to go to that regional board and say, look, employment department doesn't have data on these because they didn't even exist 5 years ago, and there just aren't good projections yet. But we need to look at the evidence. We need to have this approved. And then the last one would be anything that was, for example, part of one of the governor's policy initiatives, maybe one of those emerging occupations also. But we wanted the flexibility so that those local decision makers can say, yeah, it doesn't show up on the big, huge numbers from the employment department, but here's an exception, and we'll give it consideration. As you know, many others are here to testify on the bill, so I'd like to wrap my comments up at this point and be happy to take any questions from you.
Thank you, Graham. Committee members? We're letting you off easy. Thank you so very, very much. Next up, we have Lori Warner from Employment and Dave Lida from DHS. Thank you for waiting so patiently here this morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Should I go ahead and start? Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Lida. I'm the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Program Manager with the Children, Adults, and Families Division of the Department of Human Services. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2206. The TANF program is the cash assistance program that provides grants to very low income Oregon families with children. And within that is the Job Opportunity and Basic Skills program, which is the employment and training program that helps prepare the parents in these families to enter the workforce. The JOBS program itself provides a fairly limited education, job readiness, work experience, training, and burial removal services to these very low-income families. The Skill Up Oregon Fund would provide training opportunities for current and former public assistance clients. The additional capacity within and access to training that this fund could provide would really complement our limited service array that we offer within the JOBS program itself. The department itself we're currently in the process of redesigning the TANF program to produce the best outcomes possible for these families and to help us meet the new federal requirements. And another thing that the kind of increasing the skill level of clients allows not only us to meet kind of our programmatic needs, but it also enhances the client's ability to be successful in the workplace and to sustain their employment once they are in the workforce. The JOBS program is administered by Department of Human Services, but most of our training services themselves are delivered through an extensive network of workforce partners, and I think providing the right mix to each family is critical in achieving those family stability and financial stability, as well as helping them kind of move through the self-sufficiency continuum. And this effort really requires the assistance from the entire state workforce system and all those community partners to ensure that these low-income families receive what it is they need to be successful. The Skill Up Oregon Fund would provide additional opportunities to strengthen those partnerships and to provide that kind of that enhanced service array to those low income clients and help us coordinate our services better.
Dave, could I interrupt just for a minute? Could you back up just a little bit from the mic just to kind of find that optimum distance so the audio will be a little clearer? Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt your train of thought there.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, sorry about that.
Fine.
In closing, the Skill Up Fund would provide current and former public assistance clients additional training opportunities, and the department supports House Bill 2206, and I wanted to thank you all for this opportunity to testify and see if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. I think what I'll do, Vice Chair Lim, is hold the questions until Lori's had a chance to talk to us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the director for the Employment Department. I'll be brief. The department is in support of this bill. We see the current 1.9 million workforce at various times in their journey through jobs and careers in Oregon. We also work with all the businesses in Oregon and understand their needs in terms of a skilled workforce. This in particular right now, Lita mentioned and Graham showed you the charts. We see the horizon of a lot of big demand in Oregon for skilled folks that we're concerned that we don't have yet. And right now we have about 100,000 folks that are on unemployment insurance. That's the low. In the recession, there were over 200,000. But folks come in and out fairly easily right now, for the most part, in terms of finding additional jobs. But they're not the right necessary skills for some of the employers. And you heard from the business people here this morning, the manufacturing folks are very concerned. The healthcare folks are very concerned because if you look at the chart Graham shared with you, they've got the largest number of replacement openings most often on the chart when you can kind of gauge the pitch of your conversation about where they are in terms of that sliding scale. So for us, we see it as another tool that the state can use in terms of working with folks and growing the economy and keeping folks employed. So we're in support of the fund, and we work collaboratively with DHS folks, with the TANF clients. They have many barriers to being fully employed in the workforce and self-sufficient, and that's a wonderful connection we have, but there's always additional needs for resources oftentimes with folks that we don't have available. So with that, Mr. Chair, I close, and we'd offer to take questions.
Thank you, Lori. Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you, Chair Witt. David, thank you for coming to testify, and I have a question concerning the how many currently under the TANF program now, and then how long are they staying in this program? This program supposed to be a temporary program for them to get help, and then how long are they staying in this program, and how many are they moving out to find a new job? Can you give us a little, just a glimpse of it? Appreciate it.
Chair Witt, Representative Lynn. There's, on average, there's about 18,000 families that receive temporary assistance to needy families each month. And within that, about 11,000 of the families we work with in the jobs program. There's a little over a third of families do not have an adult recipient, so those are for child-only grants. We make about 1,000 placements a month into to unsubsidized jobs. And our average time on assistance, I don't have the figure on the top of my head, but it kind of differs by the type of family. And I can certainly get you that information.
Yeah, I'd like to have some information on it.
Anything else? Thank you both very, very much, and do appreciate your patience here waiting for us today. Is there anyone in the audience that will not be able to make it back on Friday? Not seeing anyone. Okay. We have Jerry Washington, Doris Penwell, and Bill Cluding. No, Bill's still here. You want to come up?
Thank you, Chair Webb, committee. I worked with displaced workers for 3 years after I lost my job in 2002. For the record, I'm Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. It's almost status quo what went on in the 5 years ago that is going on today. Oregon is losing its industrial base. The people who first designed the pyramid were very smart people. They built the big base at the bottom and tapered it up. Oregon, at one time, the industrial base was the foundation of this state's economy. We are not there anymore. We're losing thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs in every sector. We can't keep aluminum plants going. We can't keep steel plants going. We can't keep the woods industry going. Our production capabilities is being eroded by free trade agreements. Oregon's going to have to step out and redesign its whole plan if we're going to pull out of this. I've heard mention of turf battles between the various agencies, various training agencies. It does exist. I heard mention of the administrative costs for all the different layers of it is there. One thing that could help, and I heard it mentioned in here before, is the high school education is going to have to be looked at real serious. We need to keep our kids in high school, but we do not need to train every high school kid to move on to higher education. Higher education is good for the people who want it, that can afford it. But we need to have people stepping out of it. When they step out of high school, we need them to be able to go to a manufacturing plant or a facility, work for factory facility, and be ready to hit the ground running. There's no reason why we've lost all of our programs in high school that strips the right of a person that wants to learn a trade when he's 16, 17. But that's what we've done. We stripped that clear out of our high school system. When they get out of high school, there's a gap. They're trying to find a work someplace, but nobody will hire them because they have no training. And it takes tax dollars to train a person to be able to work and create a tax base for this state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Committee members, anything for Mr. Cluding here today? All right. Bill, thank you very, very much for your comments. Appreciate that very much. With that, is there anyone else from the public that would have very brief comments that they'd like to make this morning? Not seeing anyone, there will be an opportunity on Friday for additional comments. Ellen, would you please give us a preview of what we're going to be doing on Friday?
Yes, thank you, Chair. On Friday, February 16th at 8 a.m., We'll be having a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2206, the bill we've been discussing today, the Skill Up Oregon Fund, as well as House Bill 2447, which creates the Korean American Commission and celebrates Korean American Day.
Thank you very much, Ellen, and I'm sure that's a day that Representative Lim will be looking forward to. So,
and 2.5 million Korean people in USA.
That's absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. With that, we stand adjourned until Friday. Thank you very much, Ellen.